hard. Lily stared at Glory and tried to decide if she could trust such a strange-looking woman. Except for the odd drawings on her skin. What were they called? She couldn't remember. Glory looked normal, and her eyes seemed soft and kind. Lily leaned forward and slowly crawled across the straw toward the door. Glory stepped backward to give her room, and Lily got out and stood. Her head hurt. Her legs felt weak and shaky, and the whip marks on her back throbbed with pain. Glory closed the door and held out a hand. Lily wrapped her arms around herself and moved away, her eyes lowered. "Come on, honey," Glory said. "I'm not going to hurt you." Lily shook her head. Other than Victor crushing her to his chest and the men holding her by her arms, the last time anyone had touched her was when she was a little girl, unable to wash and dress herself. Daddy never held her hand or hugged and kissed her, not even on her birthday. When he surprised her with Abby the kitten one year, she was so happy she reached out to hug him, but he drew away, and Mama only hit her. Thinking about her parents, Lily went limp, as if she were about to collapse in a pile on the floor. Was she ever going to see them again? "It's okay," Glory said. "You don't know me yet, but we'll be friends soon. Just you wait and see." Lily stared at her, trying not to cry. Glory motioned for Lily to follow her toward the boxcar door. Lily did as she was told, but when they reached the door, she shrank back, blinking, and put her hands over her ears. The sounds were too loud, and the light hurt her eyes. A city of tents and people and animals filled a field of brown grass outside the boxcar. The big top lay flat on the ground while men worked all around it, putting the walls together and lacing up seams. An elephant carried long posts curled in its trunk across the lot, while another pushed posts upright with its forehead and the help of workers pulling ropes. Groups of men stood in circles and took turns swinging big hammers over their heads, bringing them back down on tent stakes, pounding them into the ground, and filling the air with loud bangs. High poles stuck out from the big top's center and sides, like a giant bug with 100 feelers. Men shouted and yelled to be heard above the noise. A group of dark-skinned workers struggled to hang oversized banners in front of a tent, across from a row of red and white striped candy apple, popcorn, and hot dog stands. Draft horses hauled wagons, equipment, and cages filled with monkeys, bears, lions, and tigers around the yard. Red and gold letters on wagons with sunburst wheels read, "The Barlow Brothers Circus, the most amazing show on earth." Two men on horseback galloped past the boxcar, kicking up clouds of dust. Glory eased over the edge of the door down to the gravel, then smiled up at Lily. "It's all right," she said. "Come on." Lily didn't want to, but she took her hands from her ears and climbed down. When she felt something warm on her arms and face, she looked up and squinted. It was the sun. Shielding her eyes with her hand, she looked from horizon to horizon. The sky was bigger than she had ever dreamed, and there were birds flying like black arrows back and forth over the tents and people. She glanced up and down the railroad tracks. The train was so long she couldn't see the end. The parts she could see were made up of boxcars, flat cars, and passenger cars with windows. Men and women came out of the passenger cars and boxcars and made their way toward a tent with an orange flag. Next to the tent, a big tank belched steam.
"After you get her cleaned up and fed," Merrick said from the boxcar doorway, "bring her back to the train, and we'll show her to Mr. Barlow."
Glory nodded and started walking. Lily followed her away from the railroad tracks toward the lot, staring at the dust clouds kicked up by Glory's feet, the clumps of grass, the dandelions, and the stones.
A bee landed on a dry clover blossom, and a tiny white butterfly flitted past her nose. She nearly tripped 3 times, unable to take her eyes off everything she was seeing. As they entered the lot, a man went by on horseback, and the ground vibrated beneath her feet. The yelling and pounding of stakes grew louder, but she resisted the urge to put her hands over her ears. Every once in a while, one of the workers glanced up at her, and it made her stomach turn over. What if someone wanted to slit her throat? She hunched her shoulders and walked as close to Glory as she could without touching her, trying to make herself smaller. There was so much to see. Tents and people and animals and flags and banners and posters, and she didn't want to miss anything. At the same time, she didn't want to look. It was too much and too close and too big and too loud. "You okay?" Glory said. Lily bit her lip and nodded. When they reached a line of tents at the far end of the lot, behind the big top, Glory stopped, held open a tent flap, and waited for Lily to enter. Inside, rows of buckets sat in front of suitcases, trunks, and racks of colorful costumes. Dressing tables and vanities and mirrors lined the back wall. Lily's heart leapt in her chest. Was she about to see herself for the very first time? She dropped her eyes, unsure if she should go over to the mirrors or run out of the tent. Glory led her over to a bucket, picked up a cloth and a bar of soap from a table, and knelt down. She dunked the cloth and soap into the bucket and slowly made a move to wash Lily's face. Lily drew away, her chin to her chest. "It's all right," Glory said. "I'm just going to clean you up a little." Lily stared at Glory. Why wasn't she afraid? Was it because she looked different too? Glory sighed, then smiled and held out the cloth. Lily slowly reached out and took it, then rubbed it over her face. It felt good. "Are you doing okay?" Glory said. "I know this is a big change, and it all must seem so scary." Lily clenched her jaw to keep her chin from trembling and shrugged. "Did Merrick really save you from an orphanage?" Lily wasn't sure what an orphanage was, but she shook her head anyway. "A hospital?" Lily shook her head again. "Did he take you from your daddy?" Lily's eyes flooded. She shook her head a third time. Glory frowned. "Where did he get you, then?" She took the rag, rinsed it, and handed it back to Lily. "Can you tell me?" She managed. "He gave Mama money, and Mama left me with him." Glory gasped. "He bought you?" Lily nodded. "He bought you from your mother?" Glory's face grew as red as the ink heart on her neck. "But why would she..." She put trembling fingers over her lips. Lily shrugged one shoulder and started to cry. "Oh, sweetheart, I'm so sorry." She reached for Lily again, but Lily took a step back. Glory dropped her arms and gave her a weak but sad smile. "It's all right," she said. "I understand. You don't have to let me hug you. As a matter of fact, you don't have to let anyone hug you or even touch you. If someone tries, you run away as fast as you can. Then tell me, okay?" Lily nodded and blinked back her tears, wondering if she should tell Glory about Merrick hitting her with a whip. Mama always warned her not to tell Daddy when she punished her, or the next time would be worse. If Merrick found out she told Glory he hit her, it might be the same. Lily took the cloth again and washed the dirt off her arms and legs. "We need to get you out of that filthy dress," Glory said. She straightened, went over to a trunk and lifted the lid. "You can borrow one of Tina's dresses until the Monday man can get you some of your own. She won't mind." She pulled out a simple blue dress with puffy sleeves and a white belt. "This one should work. Do you need help putting it on?" Lily shook her head and took the dress. She unbuttoned the collar of the one she was wearing, then stopped and glanced at the tent door. What if someone came in and saw her naked?
Don't worry, Glory said. Everyone's headed to the cookhouse for breakfast.
Lily gazed up at her and waited.
Oh, sorry, Glory said, turning around. Let me know when you're done.
Lily took off her dress and let it fall to the ground. It was her favorite, the only thing she had left from home, and now it was ruined. She slipped the clean one over her head, pushed her arms through the sleeves, then realized she couldn't reach the top buttons in the back. If Glory helped with the buttons, she might see the marks from Merrick's whip. Maybe she wouldn't realize it was unbuttoned.
I'm done, Lily said in a small voice.
Glory spun around to face her.
Aw, look at you!
And it's a perfect fit. Can I button up the back?
Lily glanced at the ground.
Glory knelt down and smiled at her.
It's all right. You can trust me.
Lily clasped her hands into fists and turned around. Maybe Glory wouldn't see the marks. Hopefully they weren't bleeding. With gentle fingers, Glory started to fasten the first button. Then she stopped and gasped.
Who did this to you?
Lily closed her eyes. Lying was a sin, but right now she didn't care.
Mama, she said.
Glory went quiet and finished buttoning the back of the dress. When Lily turned around, Glory's eyes were glassy.
Listen, Glory said. You have to do what Merrick says, okay?
Lily nodded. But how did Glory know it was Merrick who left the marks on her back?
Promise me, Glory said. You'll do what he says from now on.
Okay. Glory gave her a weak smile and stood. Lily gazed up at her. She wanted to ask her a question, but didn't know if she should.
What?
Glory said. You look like you want to say something.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course, anything.
How come you're not afraid of me?
Glory frowned, her head moving back slightly.
What are you talking about?
Why on earth would I be afraid of you? Lily scuffed a shoe across the grass. Glory knelt again.
What is it, sweetheart? You can tell me. We're friends, remember?
Lily lifted her chin and looked at Glory.
Mama said I'm an abomination. She said I'd make everyone sick and scared. That's why I had to hide.
Her voice trembled.
Because I'm a monster, and I'm cursed.
Glory pressed her lips together. Then she tried to smile, but tears filled her eyes instead.
Oh, honey, you're not a monster. Far from it. And you're not cursed.
I hate to tell you this, but your mother wasn't telling the truth.
But Mama says lying is a sin.
Glory got to her feet again. Come here. I want to show you something. She started toward the mirrors. Lily couldn't move. Her hands grew clammy, and she started to tremble. All those nights, all those hours staring into the window glass, trying to see her face, and now all she wanted to do was run and hide.
What if Mama was right, and she really was a monster?
What if the sight of her own face made her scream? What if she looked like Victor? She touched her tongue to her teeth.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
and tried to think. If she had a third eye, she would have felt it on her forehead. If her mouth was twisted, or her nose was split in two pieces, she would have felt that too. Still, she wasn't sure she wanted to look in a mirror. Her mouth felt dry as dirt.
It's all right, Glory said. I promise.
Lily kept her eyes lowered so she wouldn't see herself in the mirror before she was ready, and slowly followed Glory over to a dressing table filled with colored feathers, combs, brushes, earrings, necklaces, and glass bottles of all shapes and sizes. She counted the bottles to try to calm down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It didn't help. Her lungs grew tight. She couldn't breathe. She put a hand on her chest, the muscles in her neck loosening and tightening as she struggled for air. Glory knelt in front of her. "It's all right," she said in a soothing voice. "Just relax and try to breathe slowly. Take a really deep breath and let it out like this." She inhaled deeply and blew out a long, slow breath. "The same thing happens to one of my friends when she gets scared, too. Just look at me and you'll be okay." Lily fixed her eyes on Glory and tried doing what she said. After 6 or 7 breaths, her lungs loosened and her throat opened up. Her thundering heart slowed. Finally, she could get air without choking. "Better?" Glory said. Lily nodded. "Do you trust me now? Are we friends?" Lily nodded again. "How about you turn around and let me fix your hair then?" Lily thought about it for a moment. She couldn't remember the last time Mama had washed her hair, let alone combed or even touched it. And when Mama did her hair, she always pulled. But for some reason, Lily didn't think Glory would be that rough. She turned, her hands and fists at her sides, and waited for Glory to touch her head. With gentle fingers, Glory gathered Lily's hair in one hand, and using a brush from the dressing table, worked out the snarls and bits of hay. It felt strange and strangely pleasant to have another person touch her hair, to feel the pull and tug of someone else's movements on her scalp. Goosebumps rippled across her skin, and her heartbeat slowed. With the dirt and tangles out, Glory brushed her hair away from her face and fluffed the sides and top with her fingers. When she was finished, she moved in front of Lily and smiled, one hand on her hip. "Ready?" she said. Lily took a deep breath and nodded. "Close your eyes and turn around." Lily squeezed her eyes shut and turned to face the mirror. "Okay, open them," Glory said. Lily counted, curling and uncurling her fingers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then opened her eyes and, ever so slowly, raised her head to look in the mirror. When she saw her reflection, she drew in a sharp breath. Looking back at her was a young girl with flawless skin, winter white hair, and eyes the color of a summer sky. The only mark on her face was a small indent on her chin from the time Mama pushed her and she fell into her bed frame. Her lips were such a light pink they were nearly invisible, and her lashes and brows looked dusted with snow. The navy blue dress looked black against her milk-colored skin. Lily leaned forward and touched the mirror. Was it some kind of trick? But the girl in the mirror moved too, and their identical pale fingers touched, tip to tip, on the glass. The color of their skin matched perfectly, but there was something else in her reflection too, something that shook her to the core. She looked like a doll, a beautiful, perfect doll. She wasn't a monster. She wasn't an abomination. She wouldn't have made anyone sick. Mama had lied, and Daddy had too. She stared at herself for a long time, tears flooding her eyes. Why had Mama kept her locked in the attic? And why had Daddy gone along with it? Did they hate her because God forgot to give her a color? Was it really that horrible? If they were only trying to protect her, why didn't they let her go downstairs? Why didn't they spend time with her? Why didn't they hug and kiss her? Like Mama said, no one in the circus cared what she looked like. So why did she? Why did Daddy? Why did the two people who were supposed to love her more than anything keep her hidden from the world? Were they afraid? Were they ashamed? Were they evil? Overcome, she put her face in her hands and collapsed on the ground, shoulders convulsing. Glory knelt beside her. "See, honey," she said, "you're not a monster. Quite the opposite." Sobs hitched in Lily's chest. "But I don't understand," she cried. "What's wrong with me?" "There's nothing wrong with you. You're perfectly normal, except for the color of your skin. That's all. And guess what? There are other people just like you. They're called albinos." Lily looked up, her chin trembling. "There are other people like me?" Glory smiled and nodded. "I met someone like you a few years ago at Ringling Brothers. But she wasn't anywhere near as pretty as you. She said her skin was missing something that gave it color, and she was born with a condition, just like you were. I can't remember what the something was called, but other than being really pale and having to avoid the sun, she was perfectly fine." Lily's face crumpled in on itself. "So why would Mama and Daddy..." She couldn't go on. Her grief was like a shroud she couldn't see through. It made it impossible to think straight. She wanted to lie down and go to sleep, to make this nightmare go away. Glory took a handkerchief from the dresser and gave it to her. "I don't know, sweetheart, but I can see why Merrick wanted you. You're perfect, like a life-size porcelain doll."
"What does he want me for?"
Glory stroked Lily's hair. "Let me tell you a little story. When I was 11, I ran away from home to join the circus. Of course, I had to earn my keep, so for the first few years, I worked for Josephine, cleaning her sleeper car, sewing costumes, basically being her slave. Then, when I got older, Merrick gave me these tattoos and let me work for him in the sideshow. That's when I asked him to help my brother, who my parents had sent to a horrible place. He was locked up, just like you were. But Merrick got him out and saved his life. And I'll never be able to repay him for that. Now Victor is one of our biggest attractions, and I'm..." She paused and furrowed her brow, as if rethinking what she was about to say. Then she sighed and went on. "What I'm trying to tell you is Merrick sees something in you, Lily. That's why he bought you from your mama. He thinks he can make you a star. He thinks everyone is going to love you."
"I don't want to be a star," Lily cried. "I just want to go home to my cat."
"I know," Glory said. "But this is your home now, remember?" Lily buried her face in her hands and cried harder. Chapter 6. Julia. The trees surrounding Blackwood Manor were black and bare, making the estate look even grayer. The house seemed as overpowering as it did the day Julia left, grim and bulky, the color of the winter sky. It was a Victorian, neo-Gothic four-story, with mullioned windows, attic dormers, three chimneys, and a steep mansard roof. Dirty drifts of melting snow and dead leaves lined the stone foundation, edged the hedgerow between the yard and the backwoods, and trailed the fences around the horse barn. Julia climbed out of the taxi and took slow, calming breaths. The damp air smelled of mud and fungus, hay and horse manure, just like she remembered. Had it really been 3 years since she left? It felt like yesterday. She wore pink pants and a tight sweater today, in defiance of her dead mother and the somber house. But now she felt foolish. The cab driver opened the trunk, gave Julia her suitcase, then drove away and left her standing in the driveway. The windows of the house were blank, reflecting the naked trees all around. The trees seemed taller and scragglier. Maybe they needed to be trimmed. Was she already thinking of things that needed doing? The house was hers now, all 12 bedrooms, the soaring ceilings, the grand staircases, the huge kitchen with flagstones worn smooth by passing feet. It was hers, but only if she stayed. That was what Mother wanted, and even in death, she demanded her way. And yet Julia couldn't help wondering if this was a test. If she didn't stay, everything would be sold off and the money sent to charity. But while she wasn't sure she could live in the manor for the rest of her life, there was plenty of land and plenty of money to build a new house. It gave her a strange sense of satisfaction to know that, as much as Mother tried, she couldn't control everything. She stared up at the estate, wondering what she would do with all that space. Would the rooms seem empty and quiet, or would they groan under the weight of bad memories? She pictured Mother's crystal in the dining room buffet, sparkling in the light of the chandelier. She pictured her father's whiskey bottles, lined up on a sideboard in his den. As a child, she had snuck into the den and peered into the mysterious decanters and flasks, trying to understand why her father found the liquid inside so appealing. She even pulled out the stoppers to take a sniff. But then Mother caught her, and she never went into the den again, or any place in the house she wasn't allowed to go. A good whipping with a willow branch had a way of reminding you to do as you're told. Now she could go wherever she wanted, into her father's den, into the third-floor bedrooms, into the attic and barn. With the cab gone, there was only silence. Silence from the trees and the house. Silence from the barn and the fields. Where were the horses? She shivered and wrapped her arms around herself. The house looked like it was waiting patiently, anticipating the moment when it could swallow her whole. Had she made a mistake? What was she going to do out here all alone, a good 2 miles from the nearest neighbor? And how in the world was she going to run a horse farm when her parents had never let her into the barn, let alone talk to her about the business? Then she remembered she had money, lots of it, and she could pay someone else to take care of the horses. Besides, she couldn't go back to Big Al's and her dingy little room above the liquor store. She couldn't go back to stealing or being abused by Tom. She felt bad for leaving him without saying goodbye, but when she came home from work the day she got the letter, he was passed out on the couch after another bender. In the end, it was for the best. She didn't have to explain, and she didn't have to lie, and now she was free of him for good. She picked up her suitcase, wrapped her fingers around the front door key in her coat pocket, and strode toward Blackwood Manor, determined to make the best of whatever lay ahead. Inside, the manor somehow seemed smaller than she remembered, but it was still enormous. The foyer alone was 5 times the size of her room above the liquor store. The house felt cold and damp, and she wondered if there were still rats in the attic. Mother and father always denied the infestation, but growing up she had heard them at night, scurrying between rooms and in ceilings, scratching and gnawing on old plaster and rotted wood. The sounds of the old house had always kept her awake, beams creaking and shifting, pipes knocking and moaning, and her vivid young mind imagined someone or something living behind the walls. She dropped her suitcase at the bottom of the stairs and drifted toward the kitchen, her footsteps echoing on the wood floors. She hadn't eaten since last night, and now she was starving. After the attorney found out she had agreed to take over the estate, he called Claude, the barn manager, to have groceries delivered. Too bad Claude hadn't turned up the furnace, too. The smells of her childhood rushed back to her as she made her way through the house. Lemoned oak, stone floors and wood fires, dusty furniture and silver polish. She passed the formal dining room and pictured Mother perched like a queen at the head of the table, casting a cold glare at anyone who dared slurp their soup or interrupt while she was talking. In the living room, moldy ashes lingered in the grates of the fireplace. And the familiar red tin of matches sat in the same spot on the mantel. A pair of reading glasses rested on an open book on the end table next to Mother's favorite wingback chair, as if she had just set them down and gone upstairs to take a nap. Suddenly, being alone in the house made Julia uneasy, as if she might turn and see Mother standing in a doorway, an acid smile on her wrinkled face, her hair tinted gold. In the kitchen, she rinsed out the copper tea kettle, filled it, and put it on the stove to boil. The water from the sink smelled the same, iron, wet stone, and a hint of algae, so unlike the chlorinated water in the city. How many times had she been in this kitchen, washing dishes and helping Mother cook? How many times had she begged to do more than cut vegetables or cheese, more than get the flour out of the pantry or the milk and eggs from the refrigerator? She wanted to knead the bread and brown the meat for the soup. She wanted to frost the cake and roll out the pie crust. But Mother worried she'd ruin whatever they were making, so she never let her do any of those things. After all, it was a sin to let good food go to waste. Julia grabbed an apple from the wooden bowl on the island and stood at the sink, looking out the window, her shoulders hunched against the chill. Outside, the winter garden was a tangle of leggy plants and overgrown weeds. Mother would turn over in her grave if she could see it. Now, more than ever, Julia felt truly alone. Her mother and father were gone, and nothing had been resolved. Now it never would be. Over the years, she had pulled herself apart, piece by piece, trying to understand why she felt so unloved, and why it always seemed as though her parents were keeping things from her. Somewhere in the back of her mind, there were foggy memories of Mother swaddling her in blankets and kissing her cheek, and she could still picture Mother's blonde hair and red lips as she sang lullabies and rocked her to sleep. But something changed as Julia got older, and she had no clue what it was. Around the time Julia turned 9, Mother told her how she had prayed for a daughter and had spent most of her pregnancy in bed because she was so afraid of losing her. Then she went into a tirade about how disappointed she was to learn Julia's only goals in life were to disobey and argue with her. Sometimes it seemed like her parents had a separate life that had nothing to do with her, or she had been born into the wrong family. She used to fantasize that she was adopted, or that her parents were spies, or had changed their identities to hide from the mob. But that was only to distract herself from being sad. Maybe she would never know. A sudden banging at the back door made her jump. The banging came again, more insistent now. She set the apple on the counter, headed toward the door in the mudroom off the kitchen, and looked through the glass. An elderly gentleman in a tweed fedora and brown jacket stood on the stone steps. "Hello?" he called. Julia opened the door a crack. "Can I help you?"
"Just stopping by to check on you, Miss Blackwood," the man said.
He was short and thin, with a weathered face and watery blue eyes.
"I don't suppose you remember me, do you?"
Julia shook her head. "I'm sorry, I don't." The man looked uncomfortable, as if he were performing some unpleasant but necessary task. He glanced over his shoulder, as if plotting a quick getaway.
"I'm Claude, the barn manager and groundskeeper. Worked for your parents for nearly 27 years.
She smiled and opened the door wide.
"Oh," she said. "I don't think we ever officially met. I wasn't allowed in the barn when I lived here."
Claude cleared his throat.
"Well, I remember you. I met you when you were just a little tyke, and I saw you playing around the yard. Your father, God rest his soul, used to talk about you all the time."
Julia was taken aback by the comment. Her father used to talk about her? all the time? Maybe Claude was just being nice. Maybe he was worried about losing his job. "How are the horses?" she said, because she couldn't think of anything else to say.
"They're fine, Miss Blackwood, just fine. We've still got the best breeding mares around and 5 of the best stallions."
"That's nice," she said. "I look forward to seeing them." Claude briefly dropped his eyes and scuffed his boot on the step. When he looked up again, something that looked like worry, or maybe it was fear, gathered behind his eyes.
"You planning on redoing the place? Selling the horses or land? Anything like that?"
Julia shrugged. "I don't know. I haven't had time to think that far ahead yet." He forced a quick smile.
"Okay, just curious is all."
"Maybe we can get together in the next day or two, and you can start going over everything with me?" He nodded. "Thank you for getting the groceries," she said. "And thanks for staying on and taking care of the horses. I'm sure you've done a wonderful job." Claude seemed embarrassed by the compliment. He ducked his head and nodded once.
"All right. As long as you're settled in, I'll be getting back home then. The keys to everything are in the drawer over there."
He pointed at the cupboard next to the stove.
"Including the key to the Buick in the garage."
"I'm afraid the car won't do me much good," she said. "I don't have a driver's license. Mother didn't allow that either."
"Oh,"
Claude said. He hesitated, his expression slack.
"Well, if you need to go into town for something, let me know and I'll give you a ride."
"Thank you, I appreciate that."
"All right then, just give me a holler if you need anything else. Have a good night."
He gave her a 2-fingered salute, clomped down the steps, and started across the yard.
"I will," she said. "Night."
After Claude left, she berated herself for not asking him how to turn up the furnace. How could she be so dumb? She looked out the window toward the barn to see if he was close enough to come back, but he was getting in his truck. By the time she put on a coat and hat and ran after him, he'd be gone. Then she remembered the fireplace in the living room. Right now she was cold, hungry, exhausted, and overwhelmed. There would be plenty of time to figure everything out tomorrow, including how to turn up the furnace. She took eggs and milk out of the refrigerator and made scrambled eggs and toast, ate them standing at the island, then went into the living room to start a fire. A stack of old wood sat next to the fireplace, bugs and cobwebs filling the cracks and crevices of the brittle bark. After she got the fire going, she took off her shoes and curled up on the couch. The cushions sank low where she sat, and the silence of the house rang in her ears. It was going to be a long night. Chapter 7. Lily. After seeing her reflection for the very first time in the mirror above the vanity in the dressing tent, Lily sat on the ground, her head spinning and her stomach queasy. All this time, she thought she was a monster. All this time, her parents had been lying to her. All this time, she had been locked in the attic for no reason. She pushed herself up on wobbly legs and brushed the grass from her dress, the world a blur through her tears. "You okay?" Glory asked her. Lily nodded. "Come on," Glory said. "Let's go over to the cookhouse and get some breakfast. That'll help you feel better. You must be half-starved." Lily didn't think she could eat anything, but she followed Glory out of the tent and across the midway. She thought about turning around and running away, but where would she go? Home? No one wanted her there. To the nearest town? Merrick and Leon said she wasn't wanted there either, unless someone was waiting to pickle her brains and put them on display. There was nowhere to go. Walking beside Glory past rows of concession stands and circus wagons, she tried not to think about what might happen next. It was hard enough putting one foot in front of the other. On the other side of a row of wagons, 3 elephants stood with their heads down, their back legs chained to stakes in the ground. A man in bib overalls and a boy in a newsboy cap stood beside one of the elephants, studying something in the grass. Whatever they were looking at was gray and round, like a big rock. The man leaned against a long stick, and the boy bent over at the waist, his hands on his knees, smiling. Then the boy sat on the ground, and the rock moved. It got to its feet, shook its little ears, and flopped its small trunk up and down. It was a baby elephant. Lily slowed, unable to pull her eyes away. The boy laughed, and the man rubbed the big elephant's leg, stroking its thick hide back and forth. The boy ran a hand down the baby elephant's forehead and along its trunk. The baby put its front feet on the boy's shoulder, then dropped to its knees and lay on its side like a big dog in the boy's lap, curling its head into its legs. Lily couldn't believe what she was seeing. The boy laughed harder and scratched the baby's belly with both hands. Then he looked up at the man, who had caught sight of Glory and Lily, and followed his gaze, grinning. To Lily's surprise, he waved. She dropped her eyes and walked faster. Had she been staring? Was she supposed to wave back? He looked a little older than her, but she had never seen another child, let alone a boy playing with a baby elephant. She didn't know what to do. What did he think when he saw her? Did he notice the color of her skin, or was he too far away? He had to belong with the circus, otherwise he wouldn't have been playing with the elephants. Maybe he was used to seeing people who looked different. But why did he wave? "Never mind about him," Glory said. "Their kind don't get involved with the likes of us."
"Their kind?" Lily said.
"Big top performers. They don't get tangled up with sideshow acts." Lily frowned.
"Tangled up?"
Glory smiled and waved a hand in the air. "Never mind. I'll tell you when you're older." Farther along the midway, six animal wagons sat off to one side, each with a lion inside. Two of the lions sat up in their cages while the rest dozed in the heat, their sides heaving up and down. One slept with his massive head pressed against the cage wall, his brown, matted mane spilling out between the bars. When Glory and Lily walked past, he lifted his head, blinked, and watched them pass, his whiskers twitching. Lily slowed and stared into his sad brown eyes. She saw how beautiful and perfect he was, locked in a cage and filled with sorrow. She saw his thick fur, his padded feet, his sharp teeth, his black nose. All of a sudden, the walled-in feeling of being locked in her room washed over her, and the heavy, horrible ache of missing home. The sensations were so strong they nearly brought her to her knees. It almost seemed as if she could feel the lion's longing to be free, as surely as she felt her own grief and fear. Maybe he dreamed of lying on cool grass and running through open savanna in Africa, like she used to imagine escaping her room and going outside. Maybe he, too, missed his home. With tears filling her eyes, she fought the urge to go over and unlock the cages, but the lions wouldn't be any better off than she was. If they tried running into the woods, someone would stop them. If they tried to fight back, someone would hurt them or shoot them. She moved toward the watching lion, as if pulled in by an unseen force. She wanted to reach in and touch him, to let him know that if it were up to her, he would be free.
"What are you doing?" Glory yelled. "Get away from there!"
Lily stopped, startled out of her trance.
"I just wanted to..."
"Lions are man-eaters," Glory said.
"He could take off your hand with one bite."
Lily moved away from the lion and continued on beside Glory, watching him until they were out of sight. Hearing Glory talk about the lions the same way Mama used to talk about her made her sad. As if the lions were something to be hated and feared. They were wild animals who wanted their freedom and to be left alone. That was all. After leaving the lions, they headed to the back lot, toward a tent, nearly as big as the big top, but not as tall. As they got closer, Lily dragged her feet and fell behind Glory. The tent sidewalls were rolled up, and voices and laughter floated out over the lot. People at tables filled the tent. People who might stare and make fun of her. People who might be afraid and try to hurt her. Lily's chest constricted, and she stopped walking, struggling to pull in air. Glory stopped to look back at her. "It's okay," she said. "There's no reason to be afraid. This is the cookhouse, where everyone eats. One thing you'll learn is that the circus travels on its stomach. It's what keeps us moving." She pointed to a flag on top of the tent. "See that flag? When it's orange, the cookhouse is open. When it's blue, it's closed." Lily didn't care about the cookhouse or the flags. She didn't want to go in there. Glory returned to where she stood. "Listen," Glory said, kneeling beside Lily in the grass. "If there's one thing you need to know about circus folk, is that we're strangers in every town we go. So we only have each other. Sure, we got our own set of rules so we can get along, and not everyone follows the rules. But when the chips are down, we protect our own. And you're one of us now. You're part of our family. No one is going to hurt you. I know it's hard, but try to calm down and breathe slowly." Lily thought about reminding Glory that Merrick had hurt her, but she couldn't talk. Her lungs were too tight, and her throat felt like it was closing. She drew in a shaky breath and blew it out, long and slow, over and over and over, counting each inhale and exhale. After what seemed like forever, her thundering heart slowed and her chest loosened. "Okay now?" Glory said. Lily nodded. Glory gave her a weak smile, then straightened and started walking again. Lily followed. Inside the cookhouse, a canvas curtain divided the tent down the center. On one side of the curtain, checkered tablecloths and silverware, salt and pepper shakers, and ketchup and mustard bottles covered the tables. On the other side, the tables were bare, their wooden surfaces stained and scratched and dented. Groups of men and women sat eating and talking at the tables with tablecloths and silverware, while only men sat at the bare tables, all with sweaty faces and dirty hands, grimy shirts and torn overalls. To Lily's surprise, children sat here and there among the adults at the tables with tablecloths. And other than the men in white jackets and aprons behind the food counter, everyone was dressed in ordinary clothes. For some reason, she thought they would be wearing costumes. The smell of cooking grease and fried food filled the air, and people with trays lined up in front of a counter filled with eggs and bacon and toast. Following Glory over to the food line, she noticed a giant man at the end of one table, his head and shoulders towering several feet above his fellow diners. Beside him, a second man looked thin as a skeleton, his skin stretched tight over his face. At a table filled with platters of pancakes and bacon, a fat woman with a purple bow in her curly blonde hair took up an entire bench. Across from the fat lady, a tiny girl with glossy black hair stood on a stool feeding a man with no arms. Lily dropped her eyes and followed Glory's feet. Her stomach went wobbly, and her chest felt tight again. How did a person live with no arms? And why was that girl so small? Her head seemed too big for her neck, and her legs and arms looked extra short and chubby. Was she an elf, or a doll come to life? Lily wanted to run out of the tent and never come back. There were too many sights and sounds and smells, too many strange faces and bodies, all crammed together in one place. She wanted to go home. She wanted to be in her safe little room with Abby. Thinking of her cat again, her eyes and throat burned. Was anyone taking care of her? Or did Mama leave her in the attic to starve? Trying not to cry in front of everyone, Lily followed Glory into the food line, the world a blur through her tears. Glory handed her a dented tin plate, and she took it with shaking hands. "Have whatever you want," Glory said. "There's sausage and eggs, bread and jam, pancakes, hash browns, and ham." Lily didn't think she could eat. Her stomach cramped with grief and fear and nerves. But she took a pancake and piece of toast to be polite. At the end of the line, an oily-haired man, with a smoldering cigar in the corner of his mouth, sat on a stool taking tickets. When Glory and Lily reached him, he looked Lily up and down.
"Who's this?" he said with a scowl.
"She's with me," Glory said.
"Where's her ticket?"
"She doesn't have one, Bob, and if you don't like it, you can take it up with Merrick." Bob studied Lily with narrowed eyes. He paused for a long second, then took Glory's ticket and jerked his head to one side, telling them to move along. Lily gripped her plate with trembling hands and followed Glory toward the far side of the cookhouse. Heads lifted to watch her pass, and thousands of eyes followed her across the tent. Women whispered behind raised hands, and children giggled and stared. When they finally reached an empty table with a checkered tablecloth, Lily almost dropped her plate while getting into her seat. She set it down on the table and put her hands in her lap, thankful to be sitting down. Glory sat next to her, her plate full of toast and sausage.
"It's a good thing we're far enough from town so there aren't any rubes around," Glory said. "Otherwise, we'd be boiling hot in a closed-up tent. Because God forbid the townies see a freak for free."
Lily said nothing and stared at her food. Her chest was getting tight again, and she was starting to feel dizzy. She couldn't get enough air.
"Are you all right?" Glory said.
Lily bit her lip and nodded. The last thing she wanted to do was draw attention. She took a deep, trembling breath, held it for a second, then let it out, trying to calm down.
"Listen," Glory said. She picked up her knife and began cutting the sausage on her plate.
"I know you're scared. I would be too. But most everyone here is friendly, and I'll let you know who isn't." She gestured toward the back of the cookhouse with her knife.
"Like Josephine over there. It's best to stay away from her."
The woman Glory called Josephine sipped coffee alone at a table and surveyed the room, her lips and fingernails painted red, gemstones sparkling from every finger, a rainbow of bracelets lining both wrists. She was dressed in a flowered robe, with glittery barrettes in her thin gray ringlets. Her large hooked nose and close-set eyes reminded Lily of a story she'd read about a giant rat. A thin man with black hair approached her table, set a plate of food in front of her, then stood off to one side like a servant, his hands behind his back. Glory noticed Lily staring at Josephine.
"Just stick with me, okay?"
Lily nodded, her chin trembling. She thought about asking why she needed to stay away from Josephine, but she couldn't find the right words. There were so many things to get used to, so many things to learn and fear. She was having a hard enough time sitting up straight and breathing. Just then, two girls in yellow dresses approached and sat across the table from her and Glory. They looked exactly the same, with high cheekbones, matching black dots above their lips, and red hair parted down the middle and combed over one side, half obscuring one blue eye.
"Who's this?"
the girls asked Glory at the same time. They picked up their forks and started eating identical piles of hash browns, bacon, and scrambled eggs.
"This is Lily," Glory said. She addressed Lily. "Ruby and Rosie are my friends. You can trust them."
The twins sat down their forks and reached across the table to shake Lily's hand.
"Pleased to meet ya,"
they said in unison. Lily tried to smile, but kept her hands in her lap. The twins withdrew and gave each other a confused glance. Then one of them said,
"We're with the sideshow, too. sometimes with the freaks, sometimes with the cooch show.
Glory's brow shot up. Ruby, she said. Ruby shrugged.
The lot lice know about the cooch show.
She leaned forward and grinned at Lily.
That's the girly show, in case you were wondering.
Jesus, Ruby, Glory said. The circus kids know what the cooch show is, but Lily didn't grow up in the circus. I don't think she's ever been to one, have you? She looked at Lily. Lily shook her head. That's what I thought, Glory said. She frowned at Ruby and Rosie. Merrick picked her up at the last stop, and it wasn't her decision. The twins' faces fell in unison.
Oh,
they said. Right, Glory said. So take it easy, will you?
Sorry,
Ruby said. She started eating again.
So, kid, what do you think of this spread?
Rosie said.
Pretty amazing, huh? We don't get paid a lot, but we're guaranteed 3 squares a day.
Well, from what I hear, Ruby said, this spot is wide open, so things might get a little wild later.
Guess the patchmen greased the rails of the local officials good last night, so this isn't going to be no Sunday school show. But Josephine isn't happy, because Mr. Barlow promised 2 of her girls to the sheriff without asking.
Josephine isn't happy unless she's running the show, Glory said. It's her way or the highway. Rosie addressed Lily.
You stay away from that one, you hear? First, she'll reel you in like she's your best friend. Then, before you know it, she'll have something over you and turn you into one of her...
Glory shot Rosie a hard look. Too soon, she said.
Oh, Rosie said. Sorry. Do you know what your act will be?
Ruby asked Lily. Across the way, the man and boy Lily had seen with the elephants waited in the food line, trays in hand. They gave their tickets to Bob, then made their way to the other side of the tent, toward the tables with salt shakers and tablecloths. Lily couldn't help staring. The boy had touched and played with a baby elephant. He had to be someone special. So why in the world did he wave at her? Did he think she was a normal girl?
Lily?
Rosie and Ruby said at the same time. Lily blinked and looked at the twins.
What? I was wondering if you know what you'll be doing, Ruby said. What's your act?
She shoved a piece of bacon in her mouth and chewed, the black dot above her red lips moving round and round in tiny circles. Lily shrugged and gazed at Glory, a question on her face.
We don't know yet, Glory said. Merrick hasn't decided. After breakfast, he wants to show her to Mr. Barlow.
Lily thought Glory sounded worried, or maybe it was sad. Then the thin black-haired man who gave Josephine a plate of food appeared at their table and jerked his chin at Glory.
Josephine wants to know about the girl.
The skin on his face was stretched, tight over his cheeks, and his eyes looked bigger than normal, like they were about to pop out of his head.
She's with Merrick, Glory said. Where'd she come from? The man said.
If Josephine wants to know, Glory said, she can ask Merrick. The man grinned but said nothing. Then he winked at Lily and walked away. Lily stared at her food again, growing more and more nauseous. She thought about saying she couldn't eat, then picked up her toast and nibbled on the crust, trying not to be sick. After breakfast, Glory took Lily back to the train so Merrick could show her to Mr. Barlow. On the way there, they passed a tent, surrounded by hay bales and water buckets, and a group of men with an elephant in the mouth of an open-sided barn. 3 of the men held ropes that went up to a pulley attached to a pole above the elephant's head, then came down and tied around the elephant's front feet and the top of its trunk near its mouth. A 4th man with a stick commanded the elephant to sit up, and the 3 men pulled on the ropes, yanking the elephant's front feet and head in the air. 2 other men shoved a round stand under the elephant's rear end, forcing it to sit down. Lily came to a halt and put a hand over her stomach. The walled-in feeling of being locked up and the heavy, horrible ache of missing home twisted